Comics Therapy, Episode 9. No reviews, just analysis. Well, I tried really hard to replace him, but Aaron is clearly the gift that keeps on giving. Despite a nasty bout of toddler plague, he is risen, like Jesus or a zombie. And my clever ploy to replace him with someone who actually likes me will go unanswered for another week. Today we'll be discussing three books from September 18th, 2013. Thor, God of Thunder, 13, The Bounce, 5, and X-Files, Season 10, Number 4. If you haven't read them yet and plan to, there's a good chance we'll wade deep into spoiler territory, so consider yourself warned. For grief counseling, we'll talk about Volume 6 of The Walking Dead, containing issues number 31 through 36. And for Aaron's inner child, well, he wouldn't tell me, so you'll know when I know.
Guys, this is Mike Garvey from Australia, the real Mike Garvey from Australia. My confession is, I just don't get the hype around The Walking Dead. Yay, zombies! Oh no, now let's have a big drama with the humans. Now zombies! I just don't get how the book or the show has lasted as long as they have. But, you know, each their own. I just don't get it. Anyway, thanks for the show. Bye.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Andrea nor I is a licensed psychotherapist, so don't get your hopes up. Don't take anything we say as serious medical advice, and you'll be fine. Today we'll be talking about faith and belief and what we each need to get out of bed every morning. So say your prayers and take your vitamins. It's about to get real.
In between segments, your very own nerd confessions. Itching to get a deep, dark, geeky secret off your chest? Like, you love Chris Ware's building stories, but get a little annoyed every time you see it not fitting nicely on your recently unpacked bookshelves? Then leave us a message, and we'll feature it on an upcoming episode of the show. You can call, Skype, or email them in. All the details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. Remember, catharsis is cool.
If you're looking for us in between shows, I'm on Twitter at Aaron Myers and Andrea's at Andrea Shock. The show account is, of course, Comics Therapy.
Aaron, I'm sorry I wished you were dead. How was your week other than that?
Well, that was the least of my problems this week. You know, I spent most of it in fear of coming down with a horrible, horrible cold. But I only got like a minor cold.
Good, good.
Yeah, it's great. It's like the second time in my life that I haven't like spent a week just huddled up in a ball, like wishing for the sweet release of death.
And of course, it's not actually the show that you were concerned about. It's because Rose City Comic Con is this weekend.
Yes. And I really hate being sick, too.
I have a lot more sympathy for your family than you in this particular case, because, well, when somebody is miserable at being sick, it tends to suck more for everyone else.
Oh, yeah. Especially when you have two little kids. Like, right. I'm useless. And
whiny.
And whiny. I definitely... But I think I have good reason. Only Chrissy can really attest to, like, it's fine to complain about being sick, but I have a really bad immune system. So when I get a cold, it's really bad. Like, when I say, like, curled up in a ball, like, wishing for death, like, it's kind of serious. Like, I get really, really sick, typically.
Good that you dodged the bullet this time.
Yeah,
so
I don't know.
We can do the show, and you can go to the con, and everybody wins.
Yeah. Now I'm just going to come home with con plague.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the season for it, I guess.
It is. It's also cyclical, right? Because then you'll get Luke sick again, mm-hmm. and then he'll get you sick again. And mm-hmm.
Well, there's nothing better than taking revenge on your kids. That's what we have them for, right?
No.
Oh.
No.
Uh-oh.
It might feel like that right now because, you know, he's 3 and 3 is hard.
Sure is.
But 8 is awesome.
Well, that's a long ways off. And then we've got Logan. He'll be 3 by the time Luke's almost 8.
Math.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know.
No, he'll be 6.
That's close to 8.
No. Oh my gosh, it's so different.
Mm.
It's so different. We are finally at the point where there's like really tangible examples of books that I grew up reading that I love that I can actually share with Avi.
Hmm.
That's relatively new and super exciting. And I jumped the gun. Don't do it. At 6, they're too young. They're too young for like the things that you love that maybe you remember reading when you were 6. You weren't.
Right.
You weren't. You have to wait. It's going to be better. You just have to be patient.
Yeah, that's, I'm already, like, I've already screwed that up a couple times. Like, I figure, oh, he's 3. You know, it's time to read, I don't know, Treasure Island or something like that. And so, like, 3 is not the, it's still, it's too young.
It's way too young.
But my time, like, my memory and my history is like, oh, I think I was about that age when I read this. And it's like, there's just no way.
It's better to be patient.
Yeah, I'll have to wait.
Coming as the poster child for impatient, that should mean a lot.
Something I'm having to learn. But speaking of the con, yeah, I did a lot more sorting, and I've kind of run into space issues. I pulled way too many comics for the amount of space I have, so I need to figure.
Are you going 2 days?
Well, I'm going 2 days. So, but the problem is, like, I kind of—it's hard for me to figure out, like, who then do I see day one and who do I see day two? You know, because
why is that hard?
Well, because I want to break the two boxes up into like a day one box and a day two box. Then.
Yeah, no, I understand the theory, but why is it hard to do that?
Because some stuff is like multiple creator signatures. So like say like Helheim, like I want to have Joel Jones and Colin Bunn sign it. So do I see them both on the same day?
Yes.
Right. But it's a lot of sorting because then I also have books that they both didn't work on, you know, so I have extra books and then getting that all to fit. And then how do I tag it? Because like Helheim, I've got to tag as both Colin Bunn and Joel Jones for me to be able to pull it out. But then I've got other books that they're not going to both sign.
You are that guy at the con.
Look, this is an organizational problem. I don't want to be fumbling with books.
You are that guy.
But I'm trying to be respectful to creators. I don't want to make them wait while I'm searching for books. I don't want to forget things. I don't want to like be like the guy. I don't want to be the guy who comes back like later in the day and be like, oh, could you sign this for me too?
But what about the guy who's got like 27 things that he wants to get signed and everyone behind him sort of hates him?
No, I don't really though. Leo, there's only a couple people that I have more than 6 books for.
Oh my.
One's Colin Bunn because he never does a West Coast show. So like in the, you know, years I've been going to cons, this is the only one he's ever been at. So I have a bunch of things that I'd like to get signed, but I might just break that up into 2 days too. If it's like a long line or something like that, I'm not going to hand him a big stack. Sam Humphries is the other one because he hasn't done any Portland shows up until now. And he's said multiple times, bring me whatever, if you know, I'll sign whatever. And he's a guy I wouldn't mind going a few times, like if there's a line or something, just kind of doing a few rounds.
Okay. So you have a strategy.
Yeah. I'm trying not to be that guy.
Good. I'm proud of you.
But some creators, too, don't necessarily have long lines, and they're more than happy to sign big stacks of books.
Right.
You just have to kind of play it by ear. Like Greg Rucka or somebody like that, it always has like a group of people in front of them, and I'm not going to bring 20 books for him to sign.
Good. Don't be that guy.
Yeah, you just have to gauge it. But like some of the more, like, you know, smaller creators don't necessarily have like, you know, kind of a line of people waiting to meet them.
Sure.
So it's a little easier that way. And I also, like, what I kind of think about, too, is, like, signatures, maybe I don't, it's hard for me, like, to gauge, like, what do I want signed and why? Does that make sense?
Oh, I
want
to hear the answer to this.
Well, I don't know. I don't have a good answer. I like to kind of be a completist. Like, if I have all 6 issues of Helheim and both of the, you know, creators are there, it'd be nice to have them sign all 6 issues. I kind of like either them to sign just the first issue or everything in a miniseries. I don't like it. It's like that if I have just 3 of them signed.
Is it a matter of completing your personal collection, or is it more of a an actual collector mentality about? Because I remember you telling me before about the documentation involved in having a legitimate signature, and that's not what you're talking about here.
Right. I mean, unless you're going to get it witnessed and graded, there's not a big monetary reason to get things signed by somebody. It really is like a personal experience.
Okay.
At the same time, I don't always like to get things personalized either because, I don't know, I never plan to sell anything ever, but I still like the capability of doing it. And especially if it's kind of a special book, like, I don't know, say like the 6 Gun number 1, I probably don't want that personalized right? Because maybe I have to sell it someday. And having all the signatures on there, whether it's graded or not, you can usually sell that. But if it's personalized to you, then it's just for you.
Right.
And some creators only really like to personalize.
Yeah, I get that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, me too.
But, I have a completely different perspective on all of this. Have you made the most important decision of the con yet?
What's that?
What present are you going to get me?
I don't know. I don't know what's going to be there yet.
Okay.
I do have a list of people I have to get things for. You're on.
Yes,
you're
but
on
I'm at the top.
Of course, of course. That's only because you're an A name.
Fuck.
Yeah, sorry. It's everything's alphabetical, though. That's how deep the organization goes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And set up a bunch of play dates for at the con, too. Meeting up with people.
Oh, like real people?
Yeah, like Twitter friends.
Nice.
Yeah, so that'll be fun.
You're going to be a social butterfly.
We'll see. It also gets pretty crazy when you're there and cell phone service gets really bad, so we'll see how easy it is to meet up with people.
That's my least favorite part about cons.
Yeah.
Also the people.
You don't like the people at cons?
I don't like crowds.
The Portland ones usually aren't like crushing throngs of smelly people, which is nice. It's not like San Diego or even like, WonderCon or something like that where they get really busy.
Mm-hmm.
So usually I have enough walking room at the ones I've been to.
That's good.
Yeah, I don't like to be kind of crushed in with people either.
I mean, nobody does. I'm not proposing that is actually a feature that everybody goes looking for.
Right.
It's a product of the whole event and the popularity of the event. But
well, tell me about your week.
Well, I did a lot of unpacking.
Mm-hmm.
I unpacked all of the books, all of the comics. No, not all. There are still some boxes in the garage, but it looks fairly respectable around the bookshelves. And that's exciting. Nothing was damaged in the move, and that's important in terms of solidifying my personal method of packing and organizing comics, i.e. piles. Totally legit.
Well, no, not to a real collector.
Right, but I'm not a real collector. I'm just a reader.
Yeah, so I don't know. There's nothing legit about that then.
Man.
Sorry.
Okay.
It's either mint or it's not.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's most definitely not.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Other than that, just a little off week for me personally. But I feel like I say that every week. Transitions are hard. Transitions are hard for everyone, but like extra hard for me. And so this is a process that is not quite as smooth as I would have wanted it to be. But, every day is better. And I feel like I can look ahead and say give me 3 weeks. In 3 weeks, I will be like much more settled physically and mentally than I am now.
Did you grow up in the same house or did you guys move around a lot?
My parents still live in the same house that I grew up in.
Yeah, same with me. And I think that makes a big difference for being able to transition to new places too. Like for people who had to move a lot as kids, it's not so kind of jarring to have to pull up roots and move to somewhere else.
And I moved a bunch as an adult, but our last house in Pittsburgh, we were in for 4 years before we moved out here. And then we were in our house out here for a year. But I don't know, this particular move, it was harder for a lot of reasons than the move out to San Francisco. So I think I'm just carrying like a lot of extra baggage, quite literally, because of the, extra factors involved in us having to pick up and move again.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because it affects the way that I like spend my free time, both because I'm searching around looking for stuff and I'm unpacking here and there. And sometimes I just sit down and bust through a couple of boxes in a couple of hours. But that kind of physical feeling of being really unsettled, it affects my like organization mentally also. And I think that's the part that is causing me so much extra anxiety because I really need that, right? Because I look around and I don't see a house yet. I see like a laundry list of things that have to be taken care of. And then that makes me very anxious because of, I just want to be settled.
Yeah, it's sort of a catch-22 too, because like having a unpacked and kind of settled in home helps quell your anxiety, but getting to that point is also very stressful because you're having to settle your house. And if you're not feeling settled, you know, then it's harder to get settled, and round and round and round you go.
Absolutely. And so then I have days like yesterday where I just lay in the corner all day being all woeful, and, you know, good days and bad days, but sometimes I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. So I'm feeling better today, and I feel like, yeah, it's going to be fine. It's just moving is always really shitty, and moving when you're not in complete control of your own destiny is extra shitty. So whatever, I'll be fine.
Well, let's talk about some fun stuff.
Yay! Well, I don't know if this part's going to be fun for you.
Yeah, we'll see.
Each week, I give Aaron 90 seconds to talk about whatever he wants that we don't have time to discuss more deeply. This is about making choices, and Aaron has trouble with that. So, 90 seconds, one book, one new comic from the past week that we are not analyzing. Are you ready?
Yes.
Go.
I'm cheating this week. Ha ha!
Oh my god.
Okay, but I'm going to talk.
Stopping the timer.
I'm talking about one thing, though. I'm semi-cheating. I'm
cheating like me reading ahead with The Walking Dead?
No, that was a betrayal. That's different. And this doesn't count against my time.
It doesn't.
Okay.
I'm starting it again.
Okay. Ready?
Yes.
Go. Okay. I want to talk about 3D cover.
Okay.
And variant covers. So I bought a bunch of those this week. It was crazy hectic. We're recording on Thursday, so yesterday was New Comic Book Day. It was crazy at the comic book store, actually, like, fighting off other guys, not, like, physically, but people scrambling to grab comic books off the rack. Like, grown men in their 30s, 40s, and 50s scrambling for comic books. It's ridiculous.
Oh, my God, you are perpetuating a stereotype right now.
Oh, it's like somebody should have been recording it. It's just like you could put it in a visual dictionary of, you know, comic book nerds. But, so, you know, DC has all these 3D covers out. And I am getting them all. And if I can't get it at the comic book store, I go on eBay and buy the ones I'm missing every week. And it costs a bunch of money. And you know what? I have no apologies for it at all.
Why?
Because.
Don't you feel stupid?
No, not at all. It's fun.
Okay.
Because comics should be fun. And you know what?
Okay.
Like variant covers are variant, whatever, 3D covers, you know, gimmick covers, basically, are ridiculous, but they also harken back to when I was in my heyday of comic books, like your early teens to late teens, where you had a ton of those, and these are really well done. So it's just a fun thing to enjoy. And, you know, if I can, why not?
Well done. That was a minute, 31 seconds.
Perfect.
Right there.
Perfect.
I'm still going to make fun of you for that, just because it seems excessive, but
it is.
I appreciate the sentimentality that is driving the decision.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's nothing I can excuse other than just to say comics.
Oh, there's no excuse.
Yeah, I mean, why? Well, but it's also the kind of thing I don't really, like, for a hobby like that, if I have the money to do it, and I'm not, like, I know two of the four people that were waiting in line for the store to open, like, they're local guys, and they don't even read comics, they just buy them and sell them on eBay. So, like,
wow.
That kind of thing's a bummer. Like, if I were doing that, that's something you can make fun of me for. But I'm going to keep all of them. I have no real intention of ever selling them. It's
right.
Just a collection for me, and it's just a fun thing to have. It'll be fun at the end of the month to show, like, here's 52 3D covers that I've got, and I can lay them all out and roll around on them. And, you know, I mean, no, I don't do
don't
that.
Don't make it weird, dude. Don't make it weird.
But, you know, it's just like, whatever. It's fun. But if I didn't have the money and I was putting on like a credit card and I was searching them out and buying things off eBay, then that would be ridiculous. That'd be a problem.
Okay.
I'm just not there yet. Next week.
Don't ever get there.
So that's my inner child for this week. You want to talk about some other comics?
Yeah.
All right.
Comics therapy. This is my confession. Lately, I've just been looking for a new hairstyle or something to do with my hair. And I used to look like in magazines or for the celebrities or whatever, but recently I started looking around my own house and at all the prints of superheroes that we have, and I really like what Black Widow's got going on and possibly some old Jean Grey, so we'll look into that. Stay tuned.
My first book this week is Thor, God of Thunder, number 13, published by Marvel Comics. It's written by Jason Aaron with art by Ron Garney and colors by Ives Segor. Gina?
No, you're
for,
no.
Oh, I'm not good.
There's no way.
I'm not good with Slavic names. Names in general, but especially Slavic names. So I apologize. I've
great apologies. So in the first arc of this book, young Thor, Avenger Thor, and All-Father Thor united to beat the God Butcher, who'd been intent on killing off every god ever throughout time. I thought it was a really interesting examination of divinity, Marvel Comics style, since the antagonist was so focused on killing all of the gods that he essentially became one himself. So then things settled down and the three Thors returned to their own timelines, gradually losing the memory of having come together to beat, to become the god of the gods. Issue 13 starts a new arc that will deal with the escape of Malekith.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we're going to call him. Malekith, the Accursed. He's the former king of the Dark Elves and an enemy to the Nine Realms.
This is also a precursor to the movie Thor 2.
No kidding.
Yeah, I know, amazing. But but it's not that's not a detraction from it. It doesn't It definitely doesn't come off like heavy-handed or anything. Where
Don't you think it's interesting given the context of the previous 12 issues?
Uh-huh.
That talked a lot about Thor as a god and like what does that actually mean? Everybody knows Thor is the god of thunder, blah blah blah, but like what is his role with the people who may worship him as a divine being? And then like what is his role with the kind of common interactions with the people on Earth? And so this is going away from that and is much more of a like traditional Thor story.
Well, even in the first arc, like Thor historically is not a worshipped deity. Like deities in the Marvel universe too aren't like they are, you know, say in the world. They're tangible creatures. They live among us.
Sure.
Like especially Thor, he is a god among men, you know, in a very real sense. Like Thor always returns to Midgard because he likes to be with people. You know, he likes to be on Earth where
he likes the ladies.
He likes the ladies, but he likes to hang out with the guys and go on hunts and drink mead and, you know, do all that stuff. He's a bro. Especially young Thor.
Yeah, totally young Thor is a bro.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
So, but I like that. I mean, you know, it's sort of a, it's not humble, but he's like Thor keeps it real.
Except that the things that were introduced in that one shot in between the first arc and this one, mm-hmm. in number 12, felt much more, man, I wish there were better words to describe this, just kind of much more godlike. It was Thor as a responder to the needs of the people and less.
Yeah, but you know what? I would say it's not godlike. He is a hero. The difference between is sort of the omnipotence of it. And there's a lot of Thor stuff that explores his kind of invincibility, you know, because Thor is created to be the Superman of the Marvel universe.
I feel like we say that with every character.
No, but Thor actually was. Like, DC had Superman, so Marvel needed a Superman. So they created Thor, you know, Kirby and Lee.
Really? Am I that off with my, I guess, awareness of the order of operations here?
I guess so. Yeah. Thor was created as a response to Superman to like both universes had to have, you know, analogs of each other.
Right.
Now Thor is way different than Superman in my opinion.
Sure, sure.
Like the mythology, the way they took or the way hit like Norse mythology was adapted and has been adapted over the years in Thor is way different than anything like Superman deals with.
But I think your point about invincibility versus omnipotence is really interesting.
Yeah, because Thor isn't all-knowing. Even like Odin isn't really all-knowing.
Right.
He always seems to know what he needs to know in the books, but he definitely doesn't know everything. At times, he shouldn't know everything either. Like when it fits the story, he's mm-hmm. not like a god. He's not like the god of gods. He's not, you know, like a Christian god or something that sees all and knows all. Mm-hmm. And really, the more we find out too, like about as like Marvel cosmic sort of gets more and more filled out, like even the Asgardians aren't some of the originals of, you know, the universe. They're just very advanced beings.
Right.
And how it all fits together gets pretty muddled when you start mixing like the nine realms in with the rest of how the universe flows and everything else.
Sure. But I thought that some of the building blocks of the god relationships in the first arc of this title was really interesting. Most of that was new to me. I guess because for me, Thor has always been an ensemble character. I'd never have really been into him in solo titles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's also like old Thor books are kind of hard to read, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Especially like the way they're written and like the Thor speak and everything else. Like, I really like some of the storylines and how, like, the Thor kind of mythos has been created is pretty cool. There's some exciting stuff, but reading those books is sometimes a slog. It's just not, for me, it's not a great read. And unless you were reading that, like, as a kid, like, I think you kind of have to be, like, in your mid-40s to maybe, like, 60s, you know, like that generation.
To have grown up with it or to...
Yeah, to have, like, grown up with, like, you know, sick, like early Thor books through even like through the 80s are not the easiest read in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And it's not the most engaging thing for to hand to somebody. Like, here's even like Walt Simonson's Omnibus, you know, there's some really cool art and there's some really cool storylines. It's not the easiest read.
So what do you think about his role now, given the larger context of some of these beings that are greater? Captain Universe could arguably be greater. I mean, maybe it's not the same because it's not divinity, but it is.
Yeah, but divinity is like, and that's right. That's kind of what happens in the first arc. Like, the idea of gods are just creatures more powerful than you that you beseech.
Sure.
You know, for whatever you need, like. The separation between God and man is more just a kind of a mortality and ability, which is, you know, then it kind of really gets into an interesting philosophical thing with like people or men who elevate themselves to God status.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but then when you throw the omnipotence, I'm like instantly fascinated with that. Just the larger awareness. And that isn't something that he's demonstrated. And yet there are a number of other very powerful characters who do play that role now.
Mm-hmm.
And.
But it's all a matter of ability. Like, it's sort of the difference between, I don't know, say 500 years ago, where what we were capable of understanding, you know, about even the human body or the universe around us. You know, everything is the work of God until science figures out how it actually works.
Okay.
And it doesn't necessarily take away the amazing feats of, or the amazingness of something to understand like how the solar system works, you know, how the celestial bodies travel around the sun. It doesn't necessarily reduce its, you know, awesomeness because now we understand how gravity works and how stars are formed and et cetera, et cetera. So it's the same sort of thing. It's like, well, these guys can seem to know more about what's going on than anyone else. And how do they do it? We don't understand, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's some supernatural power. Just like in a lot of Thor stuff, like essentially in continuity, like the Asgardians are just very technologically advanced to the point right. where it seems like magic.
Right.
Which I really like that aspect of it.
I do too, but I feel like it often gets pushed aside.
Yes.
And some of it is
it's easy to explain things by magic.
Right. But also when you throw around the word God,
mm-hmm.
even if you are aware that the group of people that you're describing as gods are merely more advanced people.
Yeah.
It still is reinforcing. I mean, that is a word that carries a tremendous amount of weight and rightly so. There was a reason why his character was developed from Norse mythology and existing gods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can't then just like pull back and say, well, but remember, they're not like actually gods.
Yeah.
Because there's a lengthy history of evidence to the contrary.
True, but that's why there's a paradox with a lot of Thor stuff too. Like, we don't really understand where does the god part take place and where does the advanced kind of super, you know, just super meta, super being come in.
Mm-hmm.
And how does it all play together? And some stuff is best not knowing because it takes, maybe that is, does take away from the story, especially in comics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I guess I'm contradicting myself from saying earlier that it doesn't really make it any less awesome when we understand how the universe works, but maybe it does in a little, in some ways.
Well, in comics, it sometimes does.
I guess so. That's the difference between stories and reality.
Right. Right. Do you prefer Thor in as an ensemble character with the Avengers, or interacting more with the people on Earth, or are you excited about this movie tie-in story that is going much further into the other realms?
I think it always depends on who's doing it. So, like, Jason Aaron has made me invested in Thor in the last, you know, over a year or whatever. I guess it's been about a year. So he's writing a Thor story that's gotten me excited about Thor. Before, Thor is a fun character in team books. He was a good fill-in. Like, standalone, there have been some decent Thor stories, but nothing that really got me jazzed like the current run has. So having that kind of excitement behind it, now I want to learn more about Thor because I really like who's writing Thor. And the Nine Realms stuff, that's super interesting to me because now it's accessible. Like, this doesn't feel there's any kind of barrier to entry to enjoy it. You didn't really consider yourself a Thor person before. Have you liked reading these books?
Yeah, I like I said, I thought the bigger conversation within the first arc was really interesting.
Can I ask you this? And this is, I really want to gauge this from a male female kind of perspective, because like the first 12 of these like had me like had my blood pumping. Like it's like reading, you're like, Thor, you know, it's like, yes, you know, you're just like, want to beat the hammers on the ground. But I think it's felt like such a male thing. And I wonder like how women read this and like, do you get that excited? Or is it like, okay, big fights and. Right.
Okay. So those were two very deliberate extremes. And I know you chose that specifically. I don't think it's a cop out to say that I am probably in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. I'm sorry, Aaron, but I'm not like pounding Need and yelling Thor.
Right, and I wouldn't expect you to. Like, I don't think it appeals to people who aren't. I'm not considering myself this way, but my blood does get rushing. Like, there is a shirtless, oiled down Norse god inside of me that gets activated when I read these books.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you don't see him day by day because
But does Chris? Wait, don't answer that.
But you just want to go like I don't know. I just got so stoked reading these books. Like, it's just so like epic in that way.
So, unsurprisingly, I thought it was really sad. I thought the description of what had led to this plan to kill all the gods was like so, so sad. And I thought the transformation of the god killer character was regrettable and tragic and intentionally so. I mean, he was designed to be that character.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's his flaw. That's the chink in his armor.
Right. I mean, obviously I was rooting for Thor, but I was explaining this, I think I was talking to Cam about it, that there was this like lack of suspense or lack of anticipation with the resolution because I knew that it was going to be fine. It was an interesting journey that wasn't keeping me on the edge of my seat. And that has more to do with knowing like, and I think we talked about this before also, knowing that this character isn't going anywhere. He has achieved godlike status just by being around for 50 years. He's not going to be killed by the god killer.
No, but I do like that every one of these stories, especially what's shown in here, is Thor grows up. And
sure.
And all of this is like, fine, you know Thor's not going to die. You know that he becomes his father. But how does he get to that point? Like, what's the...
Exactly. And the journey is more important.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the conceit. You have to accept that when it comes to superhero comics.
Yeah,
a talented creator is capable of engaging his audience all the time, them knowing in the end things will be the same. So, you know, that's kind of an aside, but regardless, like this, yeah, I was just every month it's like I got to read this and I'm gonna just beat my chest afterwards.
Yeah, not so much with me, but not because I'm not enjoying it.
Well, you gotta find your inner Norseman.
Okay. I was going to make some sort of profound comment about the difference between an existing character and the canon and how we all read for the characters, as opposed to an independent new story like the next book we're going to talk about, and why that keeps me on the edge of my seat in a slightly different way. Would you like to do the transition for me so that I can please be the smart one for a change?
Sure. Can I just end our conversation on this then?
By all means.
Thor!
Thanks.
Hi, my name is David, and I'm calling in with a confession. Okay, despite the fact that the New 52 had a whole lot of things to love and hate, I don't hate any of it. The biggest feeling I can have in the negative column is indifference. And I feel bad because I think I should hate some of these things, like the worst ones already canceled, like Crypto or Voodoo, but yeah, that's my confession. I don't hate what DC is putting in the New 52. I love it or feel mad about it. Anyway, that's it. Thank you.
Next up, The Bounce Number 5, written by Joe Casey with art by David Messina and published by Image Comics.
Jasper Jenkins is a new superhero. His powers are the result of a secret government experiment in which everyone else died, including his friend Xander. His brother is the assistant DA, charged with bringing down all the new freaks and villains who've appeared in recent months, including those responsible for the grisly death of the city's police chief. So far, this is pretty standard stuff. But Jasper is a serious drug user, always searching for a better high, and he recently partook of the fog. That's not a drug, that's a guy. And before the entire operation was shut down in a bust, Jasper's experience took him somewhere else completely. And Xander was there, and so were a lot of other people with superpowers. Back in the real world, Jasper doesn't fit in, and he's searching for answers that go beyond spiritual enlightenment. At the same time, the shadowy government agency responsible for the experiments is moving forward with even bigger ones, pushing into unknown worlds that will bring about the end of modern religion or just kill everyone in the process. I don't know why I didn't like this book when I picked it up the first time, because I really like it now.
Yeah, and it's taken a while to bake, and I don't know if we're still not quite there yet, but there's a lot of stuff unfolding that really keeps you engaged.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I am really digging all of the conversations that I have with myself afterwards about the implications for what Jasper is experiencing and what Xander is experiencing and this kind of heaven, hell, limbo thing that exists that Jasper's visited and Xander is seemingly stuck in. I think it's fascinating, even though I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, it's a really cool premise. At the same time, it's like, what do you say is happening at this point? I don't really know, but that's fine because there's enough going on and there's enough character development to make you want to stick with it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of interesting concepts coming up here between like alternate realities and what is reality and hidden powers and tapping into unknown potential and kind of this difference between, I guess, people that are capable and people that are not.
Right. Some of which we've talked about before. I think that Jasper as the reluctant hero or the anti-hero. I
don't know. I don't think he's any either of those. Like, he seemed to have taken to the hero aspect pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's why I sort of stopped, because you're right, neither one of those is an accurate way to describe him, but he sure isn't a traditional superhero.
I think he's the unexperienced hero.
He's high half the time.
Right.
I mean, I personally find that rather endearing.
But this whole thing is almost about drug use in so many different aspects. Like, you have, I forget the guy's name, but the government guy, eating like hallucinogenic toads or lizards or something to slip between realities.
Right.
And his.
Oh, and Jasper's brother is totally addicted to Vicodin.
Right. His brother's addicted to pills. I mean, there's a lot of drug imagery throughout the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
Even sex in this last issue is portrayed as sort of like this drug that lets you that activates you. You know,
that sort of transcends reality into this kind of spiritual plane.
Yeah.
I think those are the threads that are obviously what sets this book apart from like a lot of other just kind of new figuring out your powers kind of stories.
Yes. Yeah. And it's also like which is the reality at this point too.
Right.
Like where are these guys and does everyone have powers, or the people that exist in this other reality, do they all have powers or analogs within our world and vice versa? And
well, Xander seemed to imply that he was the only one in this heaven, hell, limbo world that didn't have powers.
Yeah.
And that there wasn't a whole lot of interaction between him and the other beings unless he tries to kill himself, and then they save him.
Yeah.
So he's in this kind of terrible place where he doesn't have any information, and yet he cannot change what it is he's doing.
But it really just seems like a bad kind of guilt dream of Jasper's.
You think so?
That's what I sometimes feel that way in the issues, like, because it doesn't feel real. There isn't enough of explanation of this other reality that he's gone to determine yet at this point.
Mm.
At the same time, like, Jasper is a pretty good guy. Like, not only did he just take to being a hero when he could have, I guess, taken to being a villain. And he, you know, he's not judgmental. He's pretty easygoing. And he just wants to do the right thing. But he doesn't really know what that is or why he should be doing it at this point.
Right, right. He's definitely traveling down that kind of classic development arc of like finding himself in the process of going on this physical journey.
Yeah, and the reality and the weight of his situation too really came into play in this last issue of like, whoa, there's, you know, it's not okay to be going around, or I got to be way more careful about going around playing superhero or playing, you know, or fighting supervillains, because everyone's starting to take notice and it's getting to be a pretty serious situation.
Well, because you can die.
Yeah.
I think that's the first time that he faced that since the original experiments. Doesn't he say, he uses the word disappeared to describe Xander. He doesn't use the word die.
Yeah, you never saw, maybe we did see some bodies, but then some weren't there too after the initial like test.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know. Like, we don't, maybe that's part of it. I mean, maybe I have a feeling that this reality or this alternate reality is real. It's not a dream or anything like that, but it's also not fully tangible, at least not right now.
Mm-hmm.
And where his friend went and what happened to the people that disappeared and go into this reality, and the people that exist in that reality now that don't necessarily exist in our reality, and how that all comes together. I'm really excited to see how that plays out. I don't know how this goes on long term, because this is an ongoing book. So,
oh, I thought it was a miniseries.
Is it?
I thought so.
I don't remember it being like one of something.
I pay a lot less attention to that than you do, so I could very easily be wrong.
As far as I know, it's ongoing, so it'll be. It's okay that we don't know a lot right now, even in issue 5. Because if it's just going to keep, you know, expanding itself over 50 issues or something like that.
I think it is definitely notable, though, that Jasper is compelled to get involved. The first time that we see him as a hero, when he's intervening with the police chief, he's watching it on television, and then he disappears. Like, there is something that is pushing him to use his power in a way that,
I guess, in a responsible way.
In a responsible way, but in a way that I think it wouldn't be too difficult to expect that this young kid who's like on drugs all the time would probably not give a shit to try to be a better person.
Yeah, true.
So there's some kind of belief system that he either had already, and I agree with you. I think he's probably just a good guy who likes to get high. But that belief system is evolving because he has the means to take action where he wasn't able to before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but that's the real test of somebody. It's like given power, what do you do with it?
I feel like I've heard that somewhere before.
Right. I mean, it's not a new concept or anything, but this is exploring it in a much different way, at least in its execution,
mm-hmm.
which I'm excited for. But I don't know if there's a whole lot more to talk about at this point. You know, it'll be something good to revisit in another 6 issues or so.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I want to go on record as saying, like, wow, I suck for not realizing that I was going to dig this when I picked up the first issue several months ago.
Well, you're welcome.
I don't know why I didn't, though. I mean, upon rereading it, I was like, yeah, this is great. This is totally my kind of book.
But there, some books just take a while to kind of evolve and gel. And initially, you just read it, and that first issue, you're just like, okay, what?
Right.
So that's fine. It's you made up for your mistake. You've apologized, and we can move on. Apology accepted.
Because it was just for you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Let's move on.
I've got a very deep and dark nerd confession. It is my greatest, most heartfelt desire someday get asked to speak on a panel about something comics related. Hopefully something cool.
Lastly, we have The X-Files, Season 10, Number 4, published by IDW. This book is written by Joe Harris, with art by Michael Walsh, and colors by Carlos Valenzuela.
Okay, I'm going to just read the recap at the start of the book, because it's a really good introduction for past fans of the show, who maybe aren't reading this, but would be pleasantly surprised to return to the characters. For years, FBI agents Fox Mulder and Dana Scully toiled in the X-Files unit, a one-office division of the Bureau dealing with cases deemed unsolvable and related to unexplained phenomena. Eventually, both agents left the FBI and began a new life together in peaceful anonymity. But their past recently caught up with them as a mysterious group targeted anyone associated with the X-Files. They've abducted Scully, forcing Mulder to seek help from some old friends, but an enemy from Mulder's past has also surfaced, offering unwanted help.
I don't know if we haven't talked about this, but were you an X-Files fan back in the day?
I was. I think, in fact, I should look that up right now, because I'm sort of curious about the years. I feel like X-Files ended after I had already gone to... Yep, that's exactly what it was. It started in 93 and ended in 2002. And so I think it is highly likely that the last half of the time that it was on air, I didn't see it. Because when I went to undergrad, I didn't have time for anything. I've got this giant hole in my media consumption and like media literacy from the late 90s and early 2000s when I was in undergrad.
So like the last 2 or 3 seasons.
I think it's actually probably more than that. Like anything 97 onward.
Okay.
I am aware of big chunks of things that happened. And I probably saw a lot of it in reruns. But I have a very tangible memory of getting into the show when it originally aired. Like making the commitment to watching it weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the few shows that I remember watching like that when I was younger.
Oh, yeah, me too. This was revolutionary for me.
Right.
I mean, shockingly, I'm sure.
But I think that it's worth pointing out that there are definitely things about the show that would fall into, like, my classic triggers for Bad News Bears.
Oh, and yet, yeah.
There was something about it that maybe because it was serial in nature, and therefore, at the end of every week, everything was going to be fine. I was okay with it. I don't know.
That's surprising because there were some pretty terrifying episodes of this. But, like, I was obsessed with aliens in high school. Like, even before that, but especially in high school. Like, we went to graduate. You had to do a senior project. And so it's like some sort of, you know, big project, big something that you had to do in order to graduate. I did mine on searching for UFOs.
So let me ask you,
uh-huh.
Is this an obsession in the process or the product?
I was just very interested in the UFO phenomena. I really believed that the Earth is getting visited by aliens and
we had made contact. You're using past tense. Is that a, do you still believe that?
Not as much as I used to. I like my mind was much more impressionable and open to the mysteries of the world than it is in my old age now. So, but like, I read Communion by Whitley Strieber, like when I was 15 or something like that. And that just like, that just was mind blowing and like freaked me out so bad. Like I couldn't sleep. I was so afraid I was going to get abducted.
This is hilarious. We were just talking the other day about Chariots of the Gods. Did you read that one?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. That I totally picked that one up off the bookshelf, like from my mom.
Oh yeah.
And it's really dated. I mean, it's hilariously dated. And yet, there's something very, I mean, that's Prometheus, right? That's the whole idea of this alien culture that has influenced multiple cultures
in
early development all around the world. Mm-hmm. And that's cool as hell.
Oh, yeah, it's really cool, especially really scary, when it, especially when they're written as truth. Like, because it's couched, it's not framed as a story. It's framed as this happened. Jimmy, this is what I learned. This is happening to us, people. Open your eyes.
Man, I remember the black and white photographs in that little paperback copy of Chariots of the Gods.
Oh, yeah, with, like, the lines, like, you know, all the drawings in the deserts and the pyramids and all this stuff coming together. Absolutely. It's, like, such tinfoil hat, like, yeah, man, this is happening. Open your eyes, man. They're all around us. As part of my senior project, I contacted the guy in Sacramento. I forget exactly what he was like basically president of like a UFO abductees support group or something like that. And like we were in correspondence for, he was helping me with the, he sent me tons of books and all this, these things and put me in contact with people. It was now to look back on it. I'm like, oh, God, it's so weird.
So I did my senior project on the Comics Code.
Oh, by the way. Well, you're cooler than me.
Well, I think it's all relative, but I just wanted to point that out there. That you were running around chasing aliens, and I was writing about the history of censorship in the comic book industry. However, I clearly missed that Thor was the Marvel answer to Superman in the process of doing my research. So
it's all connected, man. They're just like the aliens, like probably took it from your brain, man.
Right. You did that really well. You should probably stop.
Okay. but to get back to the X-Files, so anyway, like that was just, you know, it was a perfect fit at the time for me too, of aliens. And I like the whole tagline, like, I want to believe, like that was my mantra. Like I wanted to believe in high school about aliens so bad. Like I wanted that to be true.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I think that there's something really appealing about the believing in the unknown and having the unknown be not of this earth.
Yeah.
So it's not a construct that we have developed from a, like a religious perspective. It isn't that you are taking the faith that has been taught to you or presented, preserved for generations. It's like, you're looking beyond that. You want to believe in something that is kind of even larger than that.
Yeah, well, I wanted to believe too that there was other life in the universe besides ourselves. Like the universe was accessible to us, that other creatures and other sentient beings could make it here and we could connect to them and communicate with them, and what was happening in the world around us was all part of that. And I don't necessarily not believe that that's a possibility still. It's, I don't think it's quite, I didn't have quite the faith in what was being explained as this mass, you know, connection to alien races that were among us, mm-hmm. as I did when in high school, which is probably good.
I remember being pleased with the difference in belief systems with Mulder and Scully. Because I remember Scully being, was she Catholic? She always had a cross on, and I noticed that in the comic, the way that she's drawn. As opposed to Mulder, who was the skeptic, who had kind of tangible experiences to the contrary. And I thought that was, just for a set, from a setup perspective, I thought that was always really interesting.
Yeah, and then but when he was also the skeptic who He really wasn't, though. He was a faithful man. Like, he wanted to believe in the gods he believed in. His gods happened to be aliens.
Right. But I think that, for me, not growing up within, like, a faith system within my family and not having blind faith, I guess, is that, like, that's the only way to describe it. I thought that the balance between those outlooks was really interesting. And I had a lot of friends in high school who had very strong faith. And I have some really uncomfortable stories of times where that faith was attempted to be shared with me in, like, not always the most, like, pleasant of ways. I had several friends try to save me. Like, whatever. That's a whole separate conversation. But it made the persona of somebody who had, like, faith but was behaving in a rational way, like, very appealing to me. Uh-huh. And then in combination with Mulder, who was irrational in his behavior, but, like you said, had faith in a different kind of god, or, you know, a different source.
Well, he knew, that was cool. They're cliches, but he knew the truth is out there, and he had to find it. He's compelled to reveal it. And that's what I like about this, to get back, I mean, we kind of strayed from it, but to the comic, but from where it launches in, that they call this season 10, because it really is. This is the season, this is the story that they would have told if it had gone on to a 10th season.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they're executing in the book, not to get too reviewy, but it really works with, it continues that storyline of discovering the truth and the players coming together and alliances being formed to kind of uncover more of this alien encounters with people, and still this relationship between Scully and Mulder that's grown over the years,
mm-hmm.
and how they relate and how they trust each other. And now they have an even bigger stake because of the children or the child.
I'm going to reveal how little I know about the child. I don't know who the father is.
I don't, you know, I'd have to, it's been so long since I've watched The X-Files. I don't really remember where season 9 left off, other than it felt very natural to pick this up and read it as season 10.
I completely agree. And I think that's important, because if you're coming at it from the same perspective of, like, not necessarily being an X-Files fanboy, but, like, sure, you grew up watching it and it was fun and cool and you can dive right back in, this was very approachable. It felt absolutely natural. The characters were, like, spot on, and it was fine. That was the only question that I had, though, of, like, oh, right, I remember there was a baby, but, like, what was the story there?
Yeah. And I think part of that goes into the movies as well, but it makes me want to go back and watch it again, because it's been a while, like 10 years since it.
I don't have time to add another backlog of television to my television schedule.
Yeah, but it's a really strong positive for the comic that it makes you want to do that, and at the same time, you don't have to enjoy the storyline,
right?
Which is fine. I mean, those TV, you know, the TV episodes are great, but this kind of fills the itch right now for me, mm-hmm. like that I didn't even know I was missing until I started reading it.
It's solid. It makes me feel, like, nostalgic, I think, because it does flow very easily from what I remember the tone of the show being.
Yeah.
And that's great. But because it was such a specific point in my life when I was watching it, I end up being like, oh, hey, I remember this. Right.
No, it's true. At the same time, it's a good story.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the characters by themselves are pretty compelling. There's definitely history that you should know. I think that enhances it. But I'd be interested for somebody younger or somebody who just never watched The X-Files, but that likes sci-fi stuff.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I wonder how much of the introduction to some of the characters is so kind of tongue-in-cheek. Like, oh, hey, I remember all of these people. And look, they're just falling right back into those easy roles. If they are not recognizable roles to you, is it weird?
Yeah.
But I think, let's be honest, the audience for this book is probably very, very much audience from the show and the movies.
Yep, I agree.
I'm stalling. I don't know if
you can tell. I was just gonna say, you're putting off the inevitable,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's time to get to what we're all here for.
Okay.
It's time for grief counseling.
Are you clapping?
Uh-huh.
What the fuck?
It's like listening to a train wreck, right? Andrea's reading The Walking Dead, and she's up to volume 6. So, how'd you do this week? Wait, first, let's not even get into how you did. Tell me what happens. I need to remember what happens in this volume.
Okay. Well, I think I have to answer both of those together.
Okay.
First is that over the past 3 weeks, the past 4, I've been reading this right before we record. So I read it in the morning,
mm-hmm.
right before, and it helps because I'm not reading it at night. And it also is a strange detachment that occurs because then we don't immediately talk about it. And so I had like forgotten about how terrible I was feeling an hour ago. And now you've brought it all back. So thanks.
Good. I'm glad at least it's fresh for you to be able to tell me about it.
Right. I do think though that if I read it earlier in the week, I would get over it and my reaction would be, I guess, like less spastically entertaining for all of you. Because not that I would be able to reconcile the disgusting actions that are taking place, but the shock would have worn off, I guess.
Yeah. Time heals all wounds except for zombie bites.
Right. So last week was the worst and this week was really bad, but slightly better in that Rick and Michonne and Glenn were able to escape from the governor,
mm-hmm.
and they returned to the prison with the assistance of one of the guys who works for the governor.
Mm-hmm.
They returned to find that zombies had overrun the prison. It seems like almost everybody was okay. Otis is the only one that was killed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are the major
plot points. Anything happen to the governor, too?
What?
Has anything happened to the governor?
Oh, my God, Aaron. What do you think I'm going to say to that?
Okay.
I think that must be the issue that everybody was warning me. And I apologize because I am reading it in trade, and so I don't know the individual numbers, but like a bunch of people warned me about number 33, and it has to be the issue where Michonne goes apeshit and like how is that not just torture porn?
Is it? Well, I guess in a way, but it's very satisfying.
Let me finish because I want to put you on the spot before you do the same to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand what is redeemable anymore with this book. I don't know what you guys see in it and why it isn't just degrading and disgusting.
Let me answer at least in turn in context of the revenge scene. I guess it is torture porn is a way to describe it, but it's satisfying. It's a release of that tension that she has been so abused by this guy and she's able to exact her revenge upon her abuser. Like that's a satisfying story point that you want, that you need in order to continue wanting to read the story, I think.
But it's so extreme. And Rick says at the very end, I believe that this is how it ends, where he's explaining to his wife that he kills the guy who had helped them escape because it turns out he was working for the governor and he had just helped them in order to then go back and tell everybody where they are.
Yeah.
And he's explaining that he killed him and he like doesn't have any feeling about it at all, and that he has realized that he is now gotten to the point where he's willing to do basically anything to ensure the safety of his wife and his son and not yet born child, and he would kill anybody that they're living with, any of their allies, any of the folks who've been with them from the very beginning, if he thought that that was what was best for their survival.
Well, I think in some ways you're looking for literary arcs, and you're looking for the stuff that a story would be telling as a story that has more like some sort of moral at the end of it, you know, that if you
understand what you're saying right now, though.
But like, the difference, and I think the power of The Walking Dead, it's a long ongoing series that explores how humanity, as humanity is, and good people would have the sacrifices and the changes that they would have to make in order to survive. And that there's a line between family, community, and what you have to do in order to ensure safety, and where does the value of having a group come in, and where does the value of being by yourself come in? And in terms of like Michonne, she's an interesting character in that way, that she has chosen to give up the freedom of being by herself in order to stay with a group of people, because ultimately we don't want to be alone. And even the people of the town would rather be safe behind their walls, living under the rule of a tyrant and murderer, than overthrow that for the possibility of who knows what.
Yeah, I don't know. It's exploring everything that is evil about people and none of what's good. And I think that's the crux of my argument, that if you're going to delve into how terrible we all are and what atrocities we're capable of, read a history book. It's awful. It's absolutely like mind-numbingly, soul-crushingly awful. And I have a lot of difficulty dealing with like actual things that human beings have done to other human beings. And so this is fantasy. This is the worst of the worst. And instead of embracing the humanity that could be left, it's a celebration of how absolutely disgusting we can be.
I don't think so, though. It's just, it seems that way, probably volume to volume with a week in between. But there is, I guess at this point I can just say there are points of redemption here. They come later.
Redemption meaning what? Revenge? Or redemption meaning peace?
Because
I'm not looking for revenge.
Yeah, less on the revenge and more on the peace. But it takes a while. I'm not going to lie. You've got several more volumes before you get to that. But that's okay, because it's a long story. And it's still going, too.
Right.
And it's not just an exploration of tropes and themes. And it's an ongoing serialized comic that deals with this reality that's been built. And the shift between surviving a zombie apocalypse to surviving in a world that no longer has a society.
Right.
And that's a long road to rebuild. But I think it's done overall in an excellent way. That's, you know, engaging, heartbreaking, and still keeps you wanting to read more.
There has to be an occasional triumph, though.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a point that you can say, this is what we're working for. This moment is not so fleeting as to be like depressing. As a matter of fact, this moment is something that we can build on and look forward to having more of. And I'm not getting at. There are not enough. There are still not enough like redeemable moments, and there sure as hell are not any redeemable characters.
You're also like, you're only a third of the way through all the issues.
Yeah, I know. You keep saying that like you think I'm actually going to finish this. And I'm absolutely serious. There's only so much longer that I'm willing to try it. It's just like, I'm sorry, it just didn't take. From a storytelling perspective, I'm not getting enough out of this. Like, it's a really interesting exercise in, like, listening to Andrea freak out every week. But at the end of the day, when I read to escape, and I read to be fulfilled, and I read to be introduced to new things that are compelling and pleasant and delightful, and there's conflict in everything, and I accept that. It's an essential part of storytelling. But the, like, the net positive of this book is just, I don't know how much longer I'm interested in being subjected to something that is so dire.
Yeah, I think give it let's give it a couple more volumes and see if you do not feel that, even though it might be hard to read, that you don't want to see what happens to these characters.
Okay.
And then we'll take it from there.
Okay.
Because there's plenty of horrible books I can pick for you to read.
I also think it's really entertaining that you think that you're going to pick another thing for me to read.
Well, if you can come up with something that's equally torturous for me to read, have at it.
Yeah, it's not about reading for you. It's going to be restricting your funds. It's going to be, yeah. Several people have already thought of the perfect thing for you. And it's going to be, you've got $10 a week. This is all you get. What are you going to read?
Yeah, well,
it's like Aaron's inner child, only that's all you do.
We'll talk about that. I think if any listeners have grief counseling ideas for me or for Andrea, let us know and we'll entertain.
For Aaron only, not for Andrea.
I think for Andrea too.
My fucking dues.
Well, we'll see.
It's gone on entirely longer than I think anybody thought that I was going to be able to handle it.
I think a lot of people were expecting you to make it all the way through, and you're disappointing all of us.
Harsh. I think in comparison, though, my outlook after this volume is less. I mean, I'm not losing my shit like I did last week, right? So that's got to be worth something.
Yeah.
But I think that it's not because I think it's better. I'm just resigned to how awful it is. Yeah, it's like, it's a different kind of depression. It's resignation and it's acceptance of the fact that it's really this bad.
Well, isn't that one of the stages of grief? Isn't it working?
Yes, dear.
Yeah, see, there we go. You're welcome. All right, that's it for episode 9. Thanks for listening to Comics Therapy, everyone. Remember, if you're looking for show notes or details about subscribing, it's all on the website at comicstherapy.com. And don't forget to keep those nerd confessions coming. See you next week. Troubles and doubts, giving everything inside.